Well, welcome to our session. I'm Barry Waubaum, and I have with me Frank Marasco. And we are going to be presenting Azure Infrastructure as a Service and SharePoint 2013 Web Content Management Better Together. That's a long title, isn't it?
That is a long title.
We have especially to spell everything out, too. Yeah. So we're going to get into some pretty cool things in this session. We did a bunch of experiments that we'd like to talk to you guys about. Hopefully help you guys understand some of the sizing and scaling up intranet sites built on Azure. If you're looking at building intranet portals, or you're looking for just general SharePoint on Azure guidance, this is not your session. Also, if you have questions about the TechNet intranet site topologies, we have done a whole bunch of stuff with them. We took all the data that they used, and we ran it up on Azure. And Frank ran some pretty cool tests. And we only have screenshots of Visual Studio, so we're not actually bringing that up. So don't ding us.
So we're not gonna freak you out with Visual Studio today and go through a painful process of reviewing the performance tests.
So. For the agenda, we are going to do just a really, really quick little demo of what SharePoint 2013, the Web Content Management interface, looks like. Most of you have seen it, so if I see a bunch of keep it going, we'll move on from that. I'm going to show you what it looks like to actually run this on Azure. I've had a extra large VM running with a whole environment, including the database, for about a year successfully. Many people internally at Microsoft have used it for demos. Then Frank is going to jump into what the tests were. So we're comparing the on-prem Azure Infrastructure as a Service. I'm sorry, the on-prem SharePoint
study
numbers versus running in Azure. So, and then we scaled it down. So we wanted to run something a little bit smaller because we thought not everyone was going to necessarily want to run, how many was it, 13?
Yeah, we had about 13, 14 servers. And you know, you probably heard in the sessions this week how big your SharePoint farm is. Not a lot of customers need all that assets. Just because we have 300 cores in our Azure environment doesn't mean that we need to use them all.
Yes, because it's expensive, as our Azure sponsor told us.
Yes.
So a little bit of intro on who we are. I'm Barry Waubaum. My background is development, and I did a lot of integration at a lot of startups. I love sizing, scaling, performance tuning. I size everything, drives my wife nuts. And I came over from the Fast acquisition in 2005. So I've become a search guy for the last several years. I'm the guy, when someone says billions, my ears perk up. So I'm very much into the scale. And right now, on a worldwide search and business productivity center of excellence team in MCS. And there's my email address if you want to nag me or if you have any questions. And
my name is Frank Marasco. I like kittens, and I like long walks on the beach. What I do when I'm not walking on the beach and playing with my kitten is that I work in America Cloud Services, where I specialize and help customers move to Office 365, removing your full trust code to CAM. I'm not going to be writing any code for you today. The other interesting thing that you probably don't know is I'm the only WebSphere developer certified here at Microsoft. So I am a J2E guy, not by choice, but I've done a lot of integration with the IBM stack and SharePoint. So if you want to talk about that, we can talk about that after the session. I'm going to ask you guys later on show me your central admin. Please feel free to email that to me. There's my email address. Reach out anytime you have any questions, not only about Azure, and you want to talk J2E, I'm more than happy to do that for you.
So Frank and I have been working together for about 3 years. We got involved in a scale lab that we built for a white paper and for the SharePoint 2011 keynote. And this is actually the task manager that was running on the machine. We had we actually had hyperthreading turned off.
Yes, we did.
So this had 80 physical cores. It took this machine as long to boot up as it does to create a VM in Azure.
And through the UI.
Yes. And you know, we borrowed it. It was really hard to get the lab space. And after we were done with the project, we had all these pretty amazingly 14.5 terabyte content databases with not really any other place to deploy it. But this is where we were in 2011, where we were working on large scale environments. So now we're moving into the cloud. Deployment's much easier. As long as you have a consumption account and a bunch of scripts, you're basically ready to go. Frank used some scripts in here, and he has a pointer to them at the end. To keep our corporate overlords happy, we want to make it really clear on what we recommend in terms of running SharePoint on Azure.
Bill Baer actually tells us that we have to do this all the time, right? This is what we have to follow.
He does count towards corporate overlordness, doesn't he?
Well, to a new level.
Yes, to a new level. So it's running SharePoint in Azure is great for development and test. You can do some really cool stuff with DR of an on-prem SharePoint farm. Internet-facing sites. Since you don't have the flexibility in SharePoint Online to build internet-facing sites yet, and exactly what that will be and when is still a big question mark, even from the devs that are working on it, as well as...
This is a little loud.
Could we lower?
And the other thing, too, right? No session can be without talking about Office 365.
Test.
We won't talk too much about that, but a lot of our customers leverage Azure for their provider-hosted applications so that they don't have to bring that up online.
Okay. So now I'm going to get into the web content management, and I will whisper. Do not make the... It's too loud. I'm not very good at whispering, though.
No, you're not really good at whispering.
Better than Alyssa, but not by much. So now we're going to go over some of the web content management. And to start, the whole concept behind the web content management in SharePoint 2013 and why you have a search guy here, it's very important, is that what we've done is you don't actually copy your content anymore. So you have your authors writing the content. So you have catalogs, you have articles, you have guide and navigation, which you can set up through the term store. So you set up a taxonomy in there, and you point it to documents, and you basically, they build it, you index it, and then your designers are able to build really rich experiences by just building templates and using publishing sites and using things like the content by search web part. So it's a much better model, and it really does a good job of isolating the people who write the docs to the people who are actually building the interface. So as we said, for the search-driven publishing, and there were some really good sessions at this conference on search-driven publishing, so I'm not going to get into a ton of detail here. The whole concept is you can reuse the content through search. So you can have the same content published multiple different ways without actually ever having to copy the document. So the content that you get here is crawled at a schedule, either continuous crawl, incremental crawl, or full crawl. Then it's processed by search. So, you know, we extract the text from it. And you also get the analytics engine in there as well to help with recommendations as well as improving relevancy. And then with the publishing portal, you do have the content search web part, and you do get that in SharePoint Online, but only for authenticated sites. And then you build a user experience on top of it. So, you know, the search-driven publishing value is that, like I said, the authoring and the publishing are separate from each other. The creator of the page really has the ability of displaying, picking what content they want to display and how they do it. And the way they pick the content is through a search query. So it's very easy to figure out what they want. And it doesn't matter if the content is in different sources. As long as their query brings it back, they'll display it. So the analytics engine, which is an important part of Project Oslo, allows for the recommendations. You know, people who bought this item also bought these items. As well as you get the scale from search in order to help you scale up, scale down, and deal with your different performance requirements. And you know, the site collection boundaries are not as strong as they are with the publishing in the past. As well as content is automatically updated when the new version is indexed. Okay. So to jump over to my machine here, what you see here is I'm remote desktoped into a single Azure XL VM. I have 8 CPUs, 14 gigs of memory. As you can see, I have a bunch of processes running on here.
Where's Node Runner, Barry? Where's Node Runner?
I know, the Node Runners are right at the top. So as you can see here, I even have SQL Server run on here. I have it tuned to use very little memory, but this VM was actually also has Dynamics AX on it. This was part of the keynote demo in the SharePoint Conference 2012, and it was this absolutely massive VM that could only run in an on-prem environment. So I shrunk it down, repackaged it, set some memory limitations for SQL, and found that it actually runs extremely well on an XL VM in Azure. Now, the XL VM in Azure gives you, 14, as I said, 14 gigs of memory and gives you 8 CPUs. So what I can show you here is this is actually the demo environment. No, I didn't change the scene name. I modified the host file on my machine for this to simplify this. And it's pretty snappy. Just to give you a really good idea, this has got about 3,000 items indexed. And can handle, we actually had a tester in Oslo try load testing this, and we were able to push around 20 page views per second. So one VM, 3,000 items, 20 page views per second. Now 20 page views per second is a lot of users. I mean, you're talking hundreds of users using the system at the same time in order to, before we would really saturate this. And as you can see, it's very, very snappy. Now, some other things are that we also have the product catalog. So I remember I said the editors own the content and the publishers own the images. So here's the product catalog we have for the different items. So this would be, if I go electronics, audio, car audio, you can see that, I mean, this is test content, so the names aren't so great, and everything ends in 99 cents. So, you know, you can see that I have the different categories. Touchscreen with Zoom It is awesome, isn't it?
That is kind of cool.
Yeah. So if I go into the user interface again, and I go into electronics, audio, car audio, you'll see that, you'll see that the ProSwear 50 watt car radio is right there. So you can see the relationship between the data and the publishing model. It's pretty darn cool. So to dive back into slides, since you guys haven't seen enough PowerPoint this week, just really quick overview of the search architecture. And all these components you see here are necessary to provide the search-driven publishing. And you can scale this out for your particular needs. For most people who are doing internet-facing search publishing are not going to have so many millions of items that you're going to necessarily need to run a very large search infrastructure, but you do need to have these all running. So on this one node I have everything running plus the database. So from here, I'm going to hand off the mic to my good buddy here, Frank. So go ahead, Frank.
So let's talk in painful details about performance testing. And before we get into that, can anyone tell me what's wrong with this picture? I did not change any text. This is a snapshot of our central admin in our SharePoint infrastructure that is, who is it?
Got it, excellent. I've never actually, yeah, so we do have Windows Azure's posters that we do
no
not
problem.
Want to take home with us, so take as many as you want. I've never built a farm without that. Frank, for some reason, knows how to do that. So
this is what happens when Barry touches the environment, right, and you host SQL Server and SharePoint on the same VMs. But one of the things, right, so about 10, 11 months ago, when Azure was in preview, the Oslo team did a performance study of physical hardware. And Barry said, you know, Frank, you're pretty good. You know, at the SharePoint conference in 2011, you had to build your SharePoint environment on stage while Israel Vega did the presentation. And by the way, I did build my VMs on stage. We needed it done pretty quickly. So our goal was to compare the two, right? Compare what they did and how that will run in Azure. So we had about 4 million items, right? Not large, fairly large. 100 categories defined. We had 4 WCM pages. We had a whole bunch of content by search web parts. Our goal was specifically do a comparison. By the way, I am not a UI guy. This is what the pages look like. So I write better server-side code than doing UXs. You can see.
I don't think you can just tap. Yeah.
No tapping. You can see that every query that we were executing to these pages contained about 75,000 items. This one is actually 70,746. This was after we scaled down the environment. Okay. Our on-premise topology. It wasn't fully highly available. We did have our admin and analytical processing component on one node. We had 3 crawl and content processing components, our index servers, our web servers. Distributed cache was on our web front ends, as well as in this scenario, what the Oslo folks did is they put all of their SharePoint components, their user profile and MMS, on the admin processing component. So what we did is we actually started off with multiple cloud services. A cloud service is basically that logical unit of work. It is a way of isolating specific components within your SharePoint environment. We finally finished with 4. So we had 2 domain controllers. We had our SharePoint servers all in one cloud service. We had our SQL servers out there. We had our Team Foundation servers out there as well in a dedicated cloud service. One of the things that, after talking with folks, is we also had a cloud service for distributed cache. We also had a cloud service for the app servers. Can we have any more complexity, right? We shrunk it down, and this is what our end-up topology is. Each one of these cloud services, this was built for performance. Okay, I didn't know what I was getting into. I haven't seen the actual tests that were done yet. I was just building out the environment. Each one of these has a dedicated cloud service to maximize the IOPS in your environment. So this is what mine looked like when I first started. The one difference is my front-end components, our MMS, was sitting on the web tier. Our BCS components were sitting out on the web tier as well. And I wanted more complexity, so I put distributed cache somewhere else. That seems kind of excessive, right? So I changed it up a little bit. I moved the DCs over to distributed cache components to the web tier. And then I got rid of my distributed cache, killed those boxes. I don't need them. Okay. All of these VMs, believe it or not, when we first started, our SQL Server was the largest, right? So I want to spend a lot of money. I want you guys to spend a lot of money. So I went with A7 SQL Servers. We got rid of that too. Unneeded. So let's go into what our SharePoint architecture looked like. So we consolidated it. This is what the end result was. We used extra large VMs. We didn't have time to go back and do any additional tests with lower VMs. All right. We had two web applications. Okay. You might have heard throughout the session, one web app is the way to go, right? Well, I didn't want to change it up too much, right? The Oslo folks started with two web apps. I went with two web apps. I had a single app pool. I didn't want any more complexity. If you want to add complexity, you could create a service account for each app pool and each service application. Don't do that. It's just too much time to. You're supposed to focus on getting the infrastructure up and running as quickly as possible with best practices. And then we had our two web apps that were exposed. I came up with a nice name called WCMSPWebCloudApp.net. I couldn't be any more original. Our SQL Server. So I started, I told you guys earlier that I started with the A7 because I wanted to spend a lot of money. I shrunk that down to extra large VMs. I did have a Windows Server out there. So when we first started this, we wanted a highly available environment, except for our admin component. You can yell at me later. We had a Windows Server to participate in the quorum. Okay? So we need that for the vote for SQL Always On. You can go with a file share, too. I'm not sure about your organizations. A lot of TechNet will say, hey, put that up on a DC. I just couldn't put that on a DC. No company would ever allow me to share and host my quorum vote on a domain controller, right? So not too much complexity, but it's just a regular standard VM, two core, 3.5 gigs. As you can see, I overscaled my environment. So very interesting is that the C drive, when we started off, Azure had a maximum of 30 gigs for the OS drive. It was preview. SharePoint and SQL don't like that. So we uploaded our VMs, right? We created a base image, sys prepped them up, and off we go. At the time, we used CS upload. And it was very painful, Barry. How painful was that?
They've improved the tooling since then.
Yes, and how long did it take you?
A few days.
Yeah, a few days. So while I'm at the bar, Barry is uploading and making sure that that is getting out in our Azure stored blob storage. Our page file, this is what Azure gives us on the house, right? That temporary drive. Everyone knows not to install SQL Server and SharePoint, right? On the OS drive, right? Yeah. So we separated that out. I went large with the content databases. 500 gigs for the logs. I'm being a good SQL Server guy, separating out everything. I had my SharePoint search LUNs configured. There's another terabyte, right? All best practices, see the theme. Search somewhere else. This is where I got lazy. I didn't want to have any more complexity. So I had eight cores. I just had one temp drive, right, for my temp DB, okay? Best practice says you can go up to eight. I have not seen a difference in the performance testing between the two, all right? If you do split up your tempdb files, though, don't put them on the same drive, because now actually that would be actually more contention. You'll actually see lower performance. And then we had attempt-db logs. And then there was one drive that was not shown here, which is the backup drive. I used it quite a bit. Actually, I did not use it at all, so I got rid of it. So, sorry about the eye chart here, but this is the sizes of my databases after we lowered the corpus of the search index. You can see, if you remember that eye chart that I showed you about all the terabyte drives, do I need terabyte drives?
No.
So there is no need, right? We say, yes, you know, max MySQL Server. We max MySQL Server. We added a lot of complexity, added a lot of cost, a lot of customers, right? You know, you guys are conscious of what you spend. So there is no reason to have those big drives. The practice in separating, yes, but you don't need that storage. Okay. Don't swipe me, thanks. All right. So one of the things that you're going to hear, right? So people, there's a debate going on in the community of where you put your tempdb files, okay? Some people you probably heard throughout this conference has said that they put them on the Azure tempdb, okay? The writable drives. I did not do that because I pre-grown my content, all my databases. Best practice, right, guys? Right? And we don't use percentages, right, guys? Right? So everyone's like, yep. So the rule of thumb that has been followed is if the file sizes is larger than 10 gigs, do not put it on the Azure temp drive. My file was 20 gigs. I did not do performance testing into capture, but I have seen some weird anomalies, right, when putting databases on that drive. Domain controllers. I know we're not AD folks here, but AD uses databases internally. Don't put those on that drive, right? Any type of SQL databases or even Windows internal databases, you want to push that off. So that's why we didn't do that. Like a good person, I put my tempdb drives outside of my normal SQL Server databases. My SQL was actually installed on an E drive because of the system databases. The interesting thing, and this is a debatable too, Bill Baer will tell you that set your correlation ID. Do that. Set your correlation ID before you do your SQL install because you can't change it later. It actually does make a difference. So right there is the default. We also didn't want our SQL Server to be our problem, and I didn't want SQL to consume up everything. So set your SQL memory appropriately. There's a nice little complex formula. I could bore you to death with CPU ratio. I'm not going to do that to you. You can see the link later. Pre-grow your databases. The interesting thing, though, is not too many SQL admins actually format the drives appropriately. I did see some performance differences when I formatted the drives. It was actually very interesting to see. I got a little bit more, I didn't have that much queue length. I had actually a lot of queue length when I just was lazy and just clicked right and went with the defaults. So format your drives.
What was the box size?
The original was 4,
okay.
Out of box.
And what did we switch it to?
64.
Okay, there you go, 64K block size.
Yes. Oh, and it was actually funny after to get that going. So all my databases, right, are sitting on the drives that are formatted. Think of the joys of putting that to 64. I actually took one of the SQL servers, since I was using SQL always on, right? I'm running performance tests, right? I'm bored. I'm running performance tests. I go and whack my SQL Server 02, and now I format the drives. And it's working. Then I was like, okay, let's be dangerous. I shut SQL off on SQL 1 while I'm running a performance test. It actually worked, right? All the connections went over. I saw the little blip. I seen a lot of, you know, pages not found, you know, the nice little 404s. And then all of a sudden, everything came back up. formatted the drives, and off we go, and then failed back over. It was actually pretty cool to see. So here's Visual Studio, just kidding. Is when you're doing performance testing, it is very important that you design and develop it appropriately and configure it, because that could give you a skewed result, right? So we had our test machines. Do we use our SQL Server for SharePoint? No, okay? So we do not do that, because that will actually add more contention, and it will actually give you the skewed result. That was a lesson learned back at SBC 2011. Is the SQL DBA created my my controller databases for Visual Studio on the SharePoint SQL Server. Do not do that, okay? Now we had to go and spend time to move that over. So we used Visual Studio 2012. We had two agents. We had one single controller. We were all going out through the internet channel, not through the Azure virtual network. Our tests were 80 users, zero think time. We had four pages, and we had multiple search queries per page view. The interesting thing, right, and this is a debate, right, everyone has. My goal was to do and compare what Azure was. Some people will say, don't use zero think time, okay? And they worry about users. I can have, you know, hey, Frank, you only had 80 users. That doesn't seem like a lot. But I can also have 110,000 users and get one request per second by doing it one every 12 hours. Skewed, right? My goal, usually in your testing, right, if you're going to do performance testing, you have to set your goals, right? The easiest way to do that is to test RPS. I found that to be very beneficial. And actually, it's more realistic, because we all want to spend more money, right? So virtual machines, you know, with Visual Studio and agents, to simulate 100,000 users, I need over 20,000 machines. All right, so you want to continue to do that and spend money? Go ahead. I prefer simplicity over complexity. The interesting thing, too, right, before we get into what the actual results were, is we had, what, Barry, six different categories, five or six categories, right, at each level. We broke up our tests, so specific ratios. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the, you know, we ran the exact same test. So let's get into the results here. What do you guys think? Who won? You cheated. Here, Barry, can you hit that for me?
Oh, next slide?
Yes, please.
Okay.
There you go. All right. Very interesting. We beat them, in a sense. We were cheaper. Right? We're not on physical hardware. My CPU was a little hot, right? My theory on that is because of the virtualization, right? And where that was at. So yes, virtual CPUs are more expensive. Barry, you get into all that math.
Yeah.
Right? So if you guys want to be bored about that, we can explain what virtual CPU usage compared to physical. I don't think we need to get that into that session, but if you want to meet me later after this, I'll be at the white bar in the middle of the casino. our page views per second, our queries per second, we actually had more, right? It was unbelievable. Our page response times, we hit that too, right? So overall, we actually, it was great comparison. We were able to do the exact same thing with on-prem. Now here's the funny story. So on premise, if you want to customize you're on physical hardware, right? How easy it is to get a new server, right? Even with virtualization, right? You can, you know,
it'll be 6 months.
Always, right? Procurement will always kill you, right? Even if it's a VM.
And they'll be configured wrong.
Yes.
They'll leave like TCP chimney on the new servers and you'll spend another 3 months trying to figure out why that machine's not functioning well.
Yep. So, you know, we were able to actually grow and change the environment at will. So after we were all done with this, you know, we presented at our Microsoft's internal conference. where I bore them to death with a performance test while we were sitting in there. Barry had a great idea.
So hey, Frank, let's scale this down. Do you think that, I mean, I don't really think that we're going to have so many customers that are going to have 4 million items looking to do 100 page views per second. That's a pretty big site. I think it was modeled after office.com. So we really wanted to say, okay, you got a small site, you get, 100,000 hits a day or something like that. The topologies that exist on TechNet are way too big for you.
Yeah, so you hear how big your SharePoint is, right? The TechNet garden guidance is like, okay, you do this. I don't want you to spend money, right? To be honest, I really don't. I want you to do things the right way. What's cost effective for you? So this is what do you guys think Barry had me do? Did I go down to one server like Barry did in his demo? I didn't do that. I was pretty close.
No, we want some level of fault tolerance, especially for internet-facing sites. People will care about the uptime.
So I left my SQL servers alone. I did not touch them. Okay, I didn't have enough time. Please. I didn't have enough time to lower my SQL server and change memory, right? Because I had to get this out. I went with two nodes. Ran the exact same test. I did lower the corpus, though, right? Because is anyone going to have 4 million items in their index? Maybe if you're Office. I don't know. So we kicked it down to 150,000 and so.
So the simple way we did that is we started, we did a reset index. We started up the crawl again, and we stopped it when we got to approximately that spot. It was a lot easier than going through and culling our content databases because the whole search is driven that way. We don't necessarily need to have smaller content databases. Now, the nice thing is if there was another scenario where someone said, well, what about 500,000 items? Well, we could have resumed the crawl, paused it again at 500,000. We could resume it again, pause it again at 1 million. So we could see how the performance changes as we go up. But it was also really important to bring this thing down in scale. So what we did is I said, hey, Frank, I want to move the topology to two of the nodes and shut down all the rest of the VMs. So we just took two of the VMs that we had the indexers running on, and I did a topology modification through search.
By the way, thank you for that. I never got to thank you for
that. Oh, right on, bro. And we were running on two extra large VMs. And we can go into the pricing. Now we've brought the number of SharePoint servers. What was it earlier?
Well, originally it was a ridiculous number of 15, 16. We then lowered it down to 10. Now we took it to 2.
Right. So, like I said, we're scaling this thing down. We're trying to hit a higher percentage of what our users are looking for. So if you guys want to see what happens when Frank ran the test, here's where it gets funny. If it isn't already.
Okay. Same exact load, lower corpus size, 66 CPU. Everyone's like, yes. No.
But what do you think was happening here? What do you think was this?
What do you think? Come on, there's no performance people in here? I'm kidding. That was trashing the CPUs. What was happening is that the new web and web 2 boxes were fluctuating. So while I'm banging away on the first node, it crashes. Everything goes over to second. It kept going back and forth. Disk queue lengths, oh, awful, right? In this scenario, we proved that we need to do something different, right? We did get an amazing, though, 47 page views per second, but it was thrashing.
Yeah, there were going to be a lot of errors with that.
So that test made SharePoint cry, right? You always, if you heard me present before, SharePoint gets mad, she gets sad. We made her cry, all right? So what did we do for the next scenario?
Hey, Frank, why don't we drop the number of users by half?
Yes. Okay. Now look at There's no thrashing. Oh, we were hot though, right? 97, these boxes, we didn't have any growth, right?
Yeah, you don't want to run a production environment this hot because it's not going to be able to handle any additional load, and any kind of maintenance will, it's going to be bad.
So the interesting thing here though, right, we got 73 page views per second, okay? Our available memory was a little bit under 3.2 megs. But if you look at this study that was done by Microsoft earlier with a similar topology, actually, the similar tests, they actually had lower through lower corpus size. They had 3 web front ends, 2 search nodes, and they got 100, right, with an average CPU of 80. I'm not doing too bad. It tells us that Barry and I know how to configure a SharePoint environment, right? So it was pretty good. Except for that first start, right? That's when I start pegging and I hit all the users.
I can configure search. The rest of the stuff, I didn't understand.
And that's why he calls me up, right? to clean up his mess. The interesting thing, so we had another test. Oh, please.
In this particular case, we did have the crawler pause.
Yes.
In a real environment, you would probably want to have a continuous crawl going on. Now, here's the thing. How much content's changing?
Can I repeat that question for the guy sleeping in the back over there? The question was the crawler component running or was it in a pause state?
So, I mean, the test isn't perfect. It gives you kind of an idea of the scale of things. In most internet-facing sites, you are going to have trickles of content changing. But since the way search works, the first little bit of it, of the index, is kept in memory anyway, it should not have a dramatic difference in the test. In order for us to have done that, we would have had to have deleted the content database and started back to 150,000, and then, you know, basically have continuous crawl growing where we're making some of the items dirty. But generally, I mean, with very few of our customers do we actually see that much content changing on a daily basis, unless price and quantity. You want to put that in the index for an e-commerce site. That stuff can fluctuate a lot. But in that case, you're still only looking at maybe 5% of the content changing over a day-to-day basis. But yes, I would not want to run 73 page views per second on this environment. But we're showing you that it does scale nicely. You do get a lot of performance out of not a lot of virtual machines here.
Yeah, the one interesting thing, though, to build off of that, right? So in the previous test, when I had all the infrastructure, I had continuous crawl running. I set it to 1 minute. We can talk about best practices later. Actually, that's what we do in Office 365, believe it or not. And so that test, we did have them running. So.
Okay. And to move on, so we said, okay, we still don't want it to run this hot. Let's drop the number of users down to 20. Okay. So as you can see here, we're not pegged on the CPU anymore. We're still above the test thresholds, but we're not as pegged. I mean, still 20 simultaneous users is, in this particular case, at 60 page views per second, you're still looking at thousands of users actively working on the system at the same time. So, hey, Frank,
actually,
what was this?
Can anyone guess what that is? We're all search people here, right?
No, what? Just me.
Oh, just you.
Okay.
All right. Any wild guess of what that is? I'm sorry? Okay. So, I didn't know what that was when I first looked at it. I'm like, what is going on? So now, I'm letting the test run, right? And I'm checking out the ULS logs, and it is a master merge. Okay?
So the master merge is a process that runs every 6 hours. If 10% of the content is changed, no, you can't schedule it. Yes, I've been giving the product group a hard time about that for almost three years.
Feedback has been given.
Okay. Apparently, they have magic tricks they can do in SPO. And I said, hey, when can you ship them? And they're like,
when you move to Office
365,
right?
Absolutely. If anyone wants to set up a case and pretend they're really angry, I will be happy to help push that through the product group. Because if you looked at the sizing presentation that I did yesterday, I don't need so much I/O on a system if the four partitions we have running on a single node are not all running the master merge at the same time. I could reduce the I/O on the box by quite a lot, but I'm definitely looking for some customer facing help there. So the next one we wanted to get a little healthier.
So in this one, right? So we lowered the amount of requests coming through, right? And it was pretty amazing to see, well, wait a minute. This one's actually doing pretty good, right? What's going on here is that's the Azure load balancer, right? Because we don't have static IPs, we don't have load balancing yet internally, but this was bouncing around from web server to web server. 85 CPU, that's not bad. I have a little bit of growth. I have 73 page views per second, requests, queries per second. I was actually very happy with this one. I was like, you know what, Barry?
Yeah, we only hit above the threshold just a little bit.
Yeah, and it wasn't terrible, right? So this is a successful test. Our goal was to show what we can get away with, right? How can I lower and decrease the amount of infrastructure that I need, right? Because my boss did not want to pay for that Azure bill, by the way. So I was very happy with this test.
Okay. Yeah.
So Barry and I are talking. She has better hair than I do. But the thing is, it's like, so what can we do, right? What is best practices? How should I do that? Can we have prescriptive guidance for every single customer scenario that's out there? That's very unrealistic. We try our best, all right? So one of the things that Barry and I, we talked about, please, is optimizing your deployment, right? Understanding your requirements, understanding your cost, right? Do you need to have all those servers? As you saw, we did not, right? So all of our customers, right? Everyone's cost conscious now, right? The future. In Office 365, a lot of my customers don't want to build up an environment, to host their internet sites, right? With 10, 12 servers, right? There's no need for that. We proved that. We know that inbound traffic to Azure is free. We know that outbound traffic is not, right? So based upon your requirements, if your company doesn't want to put domain controllers out in Azure, I would do that anyway. SharePoint needs that. Do not put your domain controllers with a VPN tunnel because that will cause latency, and that makes SharePoint actually mad instead of sad, okay? Understand, what you need, right? So I had I had 120 cores used at one point in time. You think I kept them all running? No.
Not especially after we saw the bill, the monthly bill. Yeah, see bills from Azure internally as well. At this scale, it ain't free. I'll show you what we get for free and what we can do with it, but what we don't get for...
And so our sponsor said, Frank, I'd rather pay for your bar tab than this Azure subscription. Please take everyone that's in your session and go get them a beer because I don't want to pay for this. So agreed. So shut down your VPN, your VMs when they're not in use. Just don't shut down, deallocate them. There's some PowerShell scripts that are out there. I have some links at the end, but do that. You want to keep your costs down, there you go.
So, when we were running the test, we were, we were coming into the office, putting our, work hats on, starting things up, running our tests. At the end of the day, we were shutting things down. So instead of paying
except for that one night where I fell asleep at the bar and I left them running. So.
Right. So instead of paying for the services running 24 hours a day, we were only paying for it to run like 18.
Mm-hmm.
So, one of the things we really do want to help you scale to your needs, and we wanted to fill in the gaps that existed if you wanted to run an internet site. So this was the original search topology that you see on the right. And after I ran the changes, that was what we moved it down to. So what I did is we kept the servers. There were no reason to build new servers and do anything there. I just moved everything onto where the indexers were. So what we can do, what we did is we shut down the other ones. So even, so I mean, they're still there though. So in the future, if we need them, we can bring them back up. We do, in the fast days, we had a number of customers that had Black Friday scenarios. So most of the year, you're running at, let's say, a load of 10. On Black Friday, you're running at 1,300. That's pretty expensive to make, to keep that kind of infrastructure there. And this is really the most important part about why you would move to the cloud. It isn't because the day-to-day operations are significantly cheaper. It's because when you need additional capacity, it's there. And when you don't,
you shut them down.
Shut it down.
Yeah.
And you just pay for, if you would want to, it's probably not a good idea to just constantly creating and destroying SharePoint nodes. Just, you know, shut them down and just pay for the consumption of the disk. So if you have like a 100 gigabyte disk for a SharePoint node, you'll pay $7 a month to have access to it, which is vastly cheaper than potentially having them all up at a time. So when you need it again, you would bring it back up, you would add those new machines back to the topology so you can have, like, you know, query processing, the indexing on those. And that's basically the gist of what we're going for. No. So what I have something to
Barry, before you,
oh,
I have to, one thing really quick. Anyone else tell me what's wrong with this picture? No GUIDs in my database. All right. We all use config database, config wizard to provision our farms, right, Barry? Don't do that. Right. So, for demos and for dev environments, go, feel free to use config wizard, but don't do it in production.
Yeah.
Sorry, Barry. Thank you.
Yeah, GUIDs are kind of. So, what I have here is we have as being a Microsoft employee, we get access to the MSDN Ultimate for Windows Azure. That gives us $150 worth of consumption a month. So there's a lot you can do with it. First of all, you get a third discount on it, which is kind of awesome. And as you can see here, hopefully this will continue working. It wants to re-authenticate me every 15 seconds or so. It's really annoying. But for this particular VM, you know, I had it shut down for a while, and I brought it up on the third, and I used 39 hours. So remember, since you pay 8 hours per hour at an XL, and you can see here I have had it up. So, you know, after this presentation, I'm going to shut this down, and the only thing I'm really going to be paying for is the storage, and I think I pay about $6 a month to keep that VM there, and I've not gone anywhere near the $150. So you really, I mean, if you want to mess around with this stuff, you can bring this up pretty easily. The Azure team has a really nice pricing calculator. So you can go in here and say, well, I want to run 2 XL Windows VMs. And, you know, there are discounts that you can get on top of this. The MSDN one gives you a price. So you're talking, you know, about $700 to keep up those two particular VMs. The SQL Server is kind of expensive.
Hey, Barry, can you show everyone what our original SQL Server costs would have been with the A7? Can you do that for me?
We were running Enterprise.
Yeah, we were running Enterprise.
Because, you know, since we're like, yeah, it's kind of...
Two nodes?
Yeah, so, I mean, you're talking, yeah.
We don't
need that.
Now, show them what we did.
So we brought it down to XL, which is a little cheaper, but really, from all intents and purposes, we could have run the standard. We didn't necessarily need to run Enterprise for a small environment. And, you know, really, I think we could probably scale it down to a large as well. Maybe, yeah. You think medium? You think that's too small?
I think we'll be fine. So when we were doing our performance test, SQL was not our bottleneck. At all. SQL maintained, believe it or not, at 22% CPU.
It's because you're caching a lot of the page hits through the distributed cache. That's a really important part of the internet sites. That's one of the major reasons that if you look at all the benchmarks, we're able to keep the page latency to like about a second and a quarter.
And or if you want, you can leverage the REST API, right? And then, but you know, there's certain things. Right?
Yeah, they're different scaling. They scale differently.
Yeah, and simplicity. We preferred again our goal and our approach. Simplicity always preferred.
Right. So.
So some of the things, right? Here's the biggest thing when you're working with Azure or any type of SharePoint implementation or even any implementation, design first. Understand what you're doing. Your cloud services, make it simple. I was able to change our topology, right? Very simple by having that one cloud service for Azure for our SharePoint, right? If I had multiple ones like I did before, that was a problem, right? So understand, I was able to change based upon what Barry wanted me to do. The interesting thing, if you don't like the app, whatever.cloud, you can use CNames, right? You heard that before. From a SQL standpoint, people prefer, you know, there's a debate about aliases versus DNS records. I go with CNames, right? So yes, don't create an A record internally because of the changing IP addresses in Azure, right? So that's a problem. You want to, you know, make it simple. Start your DCs first, okay? There's a helpful hint, because if you start SQL first and then start up your DCs, nothing works. Put all your databases, right, that you need, even AD or SQL Server databases. Try not to use the temp drives because Azure has the right cache. And SharePoint best practices, they don't change. Everything is still the same.
Okay, so we have some useful things for you. There has been some talk of the automation scripts for SharePoint 2013 running in Azure. It's on GitHub. It's cool stuff.
Yeah, or if you want to create everything in the UI and waste your time, you have that as an option. I like using your time effectively, right? Use the scripts. It was part of from the Azure team and the SharePoint team working together. We actually do that once in a while, so go check that out. We have our best practices where they go into painful details more than I did about Windows Azure as an infrastructure as a service for SharePoint. I also need to throw this out to Bill Baer, right? So, you know, Bill Baer, go if you want to learn about SQL Server Academy.
Okay. So, takeaways?
So what did we learn, Barry?
It doesn't need to be so big.
That is correct. We can scale when we need to. It runs in Azure, and it's supported. I was actually very shocked that it actually worked.
It's not supported to run the database and SharePoint on the same VM, but I mean, the other stuff is.
Well, yeah. You can do that, right, for your dev and your demo, Barry, but don't do that in production, guys, please.
Right.
It was amazing. One of the other things too. I know that other sessions.
Yeah. Right? So there's one more session: the strategy behind building a successful social internet. After this, I know you guys are probably like exhausted of being in PowerPoint presentations, especially if you haven't missed a session. So we'll open it up for some questions. I know you had one.
Oh, I'm sure. So,
four scenarios, four options, all supported?
Yes. So it actually would work. So what I have a customer in, what's that? Oh, yeah. So the question, thank you, David. The question was, is what is the supported Active Directory infrastructure for on-prem and Azure? So when my customer's being in Office 365, they want to keep those permissions. You know, they don't want to stand up all these servers, right? We're in dedicated. We don't have public-facing sites, right, in dedicated. So what we did, and what I like this pattern, is we need Active Directory domain controllers. Read-only domain controllers for SharePoint, she don't like. She doesn't like that, she gets mad. okay? It all is based upon your scenario. What I like to do is stand up a resource force model in Azure, right? Set up that, and that's how you communicate. People Picker works great. Another scenario is, you know, if you don't want the VPN tunnel, right, you can also use ADFS. Okay? ADFS actually works. Kirk Evans, right, earlier this week, he talked about it. Go check out that session. That is also an option. Just do me one favor. Don't put your SharePoint needs domain controllers. Keep them. Put something out there, right? You need something out there. Don't do it stretched, right? Because you will run into problems, right? So that's what I recommend.
Some guidance I'm getting from MDS is for stretching.
Okay. When that happens, it is very hard. So it, security people, really, you're going to put my domain controllers out in Azure or in the cloud. In dedicated, we do, right? So in dedicated, we follow that same model, right? It works for our customers. If there is a scenario where they don't want it at all, right, ADFS is probably your best route, and you can hit that through there. Use SAML. That's what I would do. Okay. And if anyone tells you to put your farm in stretch mode, please feel free to email me those individuals, and we will have a nice little conversation.
Not the farm in the stretch mode, but the domain in the stretch mode.
Yeah. So, the same thing actually applies, right? Because, you know, we did some testing. We have 90 millisecond latency from our SharePoint servers to the domain controllers. She doesn't like that either. The one thing, too, right, that I want to, is there any other questions? You guys ready to get out?
So there's one more thing I want to mention. It's actually kind of funny. So our team is obsessed with good ratings, so we would really appreciate if you provide a good rating. And as a bonus, if you have any questions and other types of scenarios you'd like us to try, Put that in here.
Yep. So. Yep.
So
fives, right? Give us fives. Thank you, everyone. Make sure you tip your waitress. But you know, put in your feedback, right? What do you want to see, right? If there's a scenario that you have at your customer or your company, let us know. Email us. Put it in the survey, because we want to run that. We want to be able to capture and come out with a white paper that will.
That will give us access to this Azure consumption account for longer than we've had access to it. But so if we say, oh my God, Tony, you have to continue giving us access. We got all this really cool feedback that they want to try this environment. Can we do that and put that into a white paper? And it'll be like, okay.
Yeah, and hopefully our boss, you know, it's for the business value for our customers, not for Frank and Barry. Okay.
So anything else? Everyone have a safe trip home. We hope you enjoyed the conference. And if you're interested in the, if you've used the Query API tool at all with search in SharePoint 2013, they're going to show off some new stuff they've added to that today. Mikael Svensson, one of the MVPs, hey, there he is. So if you follow him, he's going to do a super awesome session. So thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.